Good morning, everyone out there. This is Jane reading to you on a once again another very frigid morning on the 28th of January 2026. I'll be reading from the News Gazette. Let's start with a health-related piece from the Illinois Department of Public Health. The headline reads, State sees worst flu season in recent years as vaccine skepticism grows. Flu cases are increasing rapidly in Illinois as the state sees its worst flu season in more than 15 years. At least 100 people have died from the flu this season in Illinois, with 77 of those deaths occurring this month, according to the Illinois Department of Public Health. Children and the elderly have been the most affected age groups. So far, there have been 3 pediatric fatalities in Illinois this flu season, the IDPH reports. The IDPH reported this month that flu activity in the state has climbed to very high, the most severe of 5 categories of respiratory illness, as defined by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The 2009-2010 season was the last time the state reached such high numbers. The Public Health Department reported that for the week of January 11 to 17, on average, 3% of all emergency department visits and 2.1% of hospital admissions were for the flu. The IDPH does not report total number of cases. Additionally, 16.9% of flu tests, or 2,963 tests done in a lab, were positive for flu. There were also 414 ICU admissions across the state for the flu. The height of flu season is typically from early to mid-February. According to the IDPH, flu outbreaks are specifically growing in West Chicago, Bellwood, Rockford, Metro East, Peoria, and Champaign. Additionally, the CDC reports at least 230,000 people have been hospitalized for flu nationwide, and the numbers continue to rise. Dr. Taylor Hale Sargent, an associate professor at Northwestern University who specializes in the cold and flu, vaccines and pediatric illnesses, said one reason Illinois is having such a severe flu season is because fewer people are getting vaccinated against the flu. We've definitely seen just overall vaccination rates decreasing for years, Heald Sargent said. We just keep trying to remind people that vaccines are safe and effective, and they've been well studied. If you look back over the past century and a half, some of the biggest gains in modern medicine have been because of vaccines. 2 significant reasons people distrust the flu vaccine are that they may experience flu symptoms after receiving it, and sometimes people still get the flu after receiving the shot, according to Held Sargent. Another explanation for these feelings of distrust could be that people often forget that the goal of the flu vaccine is to prevent hospitalization, not to build complete and total immunity from the disease. And staying with the theme of health and safety, here's a piece out of Danville. Youth Action Expo, Town Hall, building off an existing foundation, Danville youth to present project ideas to curb gun violence, shaped by topics discussed during first town hall in July. This is Town Hall Part 2. A midnight basketball program to provide youth with a safe third space. A community outreach initiative that connects with families and neighborhoods after incidents of gun violence to provide support and resources. A street intervention program centered on prevention, de-escalation, and relationship building within the community. These are just some of the project ideas local students have been working on that will be presented at Thursday's Youth Action Expo featuring Project Success Youth Council Peace Ambassadors. The projects were shaped by ideas gathered during their first community town hall back in July. The Youth Action Expo, a youth-led town hall, part two on gun violence prevention, will be from 6 to 8 p.m. at Laura Lee Fellowship House on Williams Street in Danville. The event will feature a dinner, youth showcase, project presentations, walk-around expo, past thematic reflection, and raffle. It's free and open to the public. One of those involved in the Youth Expo planning, Chase Clark, says, "Our goal for the town hall is to present these ideas as tangible, community-based solutions, and create clear pathways for residents, organizations, and leaders to partner with us." Clark added that for this town hall part two, "My primary project has focused on researching and gathering data on how a gun violence task force could be implemented in Danville, including structure, community partnerships, and successful models from other cities." Another student youth council leader, Curtis Beasley IV, says, "The main idea of this upcoming youth expo is to frame gun violence in our community as a public health issue, which, based on our research, we feel is necessary to being proactive about gun violence prevention rather than being reactive to it. During the expo, we will get more into detail about defining public health and what the implications of it are in the context of gun violence." He too added, beyond that general idea, another project includes community block parties in addition to the youth and community advocacy for a response plan and the gun violence task force with street outreach programs. "My personal hope for the night is to gain the interest of community members by expressing our vision to them, which hopefully will lead more members of the community wanting to be involved with our case, with our cause," Beasley stated. As for the future, Beasley's hope is that we can continue building on this foundation we are establishing and remain dedicated to making a true difference by basing our actions on empirical evidence gathered from research that implicates success in gun violence prevention. Project Success Violence Prevention Family Outreach Coordinator Jamie Neitlinger says the Project Success Youth Council currently consists of 16 dedicated students who meet regularly and work collaboratively to bring research-based gun violence prevention best practices to the Danville community. The students have spent months developing their ideas through research, planning, and direct collaboration with community members. Neitlinger added that community collaboration has been central to this work. The youth have been actively partnering with Phil and Yolanda Davis, parents of gun violence victim Anya Davis, Danville Alderwoman Tricia Teague, Mary Catherine Robertson, with Youth U.S. Representative Robin Kelly's office, and support staff at Project Success throughout the planning and development process. Peer court youths also have been attending planning meetings, and the group also recently welcomed students from Schlarman Academy's Future Problem Solvers group, who have joined the council and are now collaborating alongside community members and fellow youth leaders. Attendees at the Youth Expo will be able to scan a QR code to complete an interest survey and get involved. Community members and organizations can sign up to volunteer, sponsor, host, or partner to help bring these youth-led ideas to life. The public can follow updates, too, on Facebook about the Project Success Violence Prevention Family Outreach Program, which funds the Youth Council. And here's some good news for those of you who fly out of Willard Airport with any regularity. United returning with daily O'Hare flights. Flights to Chicago are about to get a lot more frequent, Willard Airport officials announced Tuesday. Starting April 30th, United Airlines is set to start offering flights from Willard Airport to O'Hare International Airport 4 times daily. Willard Executive Director Tim Bannon said these new options will be provided in addition to the 2 or 3 Champaign to Chicago flights provided by American Airlines daily. Putting additional seats and another carrier into our market is going to be extremely beneficial for our airport and our community. With these frequent short flights, travelers will be connected to 207 destinations from Champaign with only a single stop, including 45 new destinations. Adding capacity, adding destinations, adding options, these are all just great things about this new partnership with United Airlines, which really builds on the existing partnership that we have with American, Bannon said. American has been Willard's longest-standing partner, he said, and there are no changes expected on that front, as it continues to stand strong and be successful. Bannon said that he has no doubts that the additional flights will be used, as Willard currently only serves about 14% of the demand in this area. At this point, many people opt to drive to Chicago or Indianapolis and fly from those airports rather than going through Willard and taking a layover. However, Bannon said that flights out of Willard have about 80% of their seats filled on average. That number is even accounting for flights such as an intermittent late-night trip that mostly intends to return an aircraft to Chicago and rarely has more than a few passengers. This will not be the first time United has offered flights out of Willard. Bannon said that most recently the airline served the local market from 2017 through 2019, but it wasn't right at that time. That was a completely different industry at that time with completely different circumstances, Bannon said. We're refreshed to see that United is giving this market another chance and also adding significant capacity to our market, capacity which I am confident we can fill. He said he would encourage people to take advantage of the new flight options rather than driving to other airports because increased use of these flights will make the market more attractive, ultimately rewarding it with more capacity, more flights, and more destinations in the future. Capturing that driving traffic is really important to the success of these new flights, Bannon said. It's really important that everybody knows that it's there and that it's a new opportunity and a refreshed opportunity. The list of new destinations, only a single stop away, is long, but some highlights include many U.S. cities alongside international locations like Amsterdam in the Netherlands, Munich, Germany, Ottawa, Canada, and Zurich, Switzerland. Tickets go on sale Thursday afternoon, Bannon said. He isn't sure exactly when they'll be available, as that is up to when United decides to make the schedule live, but they'll be on all the usual platforms to purchase plane tickets. And now the political news out of Springfield. Election 2026 is upon us. Illinois Democratic U.S. Senate primary heats up over ICE. Illinois' once sleepy Democratic primary for retiring Dick Durbin's seat heated up Monday night as the three leading contenders used their first live debate to cast themselves as the strongest bulwark against President Donald Trump and his administration's aggressive immigration enforcement tactics. The hour-long debate, hosted by the Chicago Sun-Times, WBEZ, and the University of Chicago, came in the wake of 2 deadly shootings involving federal immigration agents in Minneapolis this month that have sparked national outcry and echoed the enforcement campaign that targeted and disrupted the Chicago region last fall. On the question of whether to abolish ICE, the three candidates, Representative Robin Kelly of Linwood, Representative Raja Krishnamoorthy of Schaumburg, and Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton, all to varying degrees, called for U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement to be dismantled, but deferred on the extent. I want to abolish ICE because this agency cannot be reformed, Stratton said, adding that it doesn't matter whose ICE it is. Stratton sought to create a wedge against her opponents, going even further than Governor J.B. Pritzker, who came out in favor of abolishing Trump's ICE. The agency has ratcheted up in aggressiveness since it received a massive funding boost under the One Big Beautiful Bill Act that Trump signed last year. Pritzker endorsed his number two's campaign. Some Democrats view the phrasing as an attempt to qualify a slogan that, in its absolute form, could politically backfire, much as Defund the Police did for the party in 2020. Krishnamoorthy said he supports abolishing Trump's ICE while backing reforms such as banning agents from wearing face coverings, requiring visible identification, and installing an inspector general with the agency to ensure compliances with laws and regulations. Kelly said they needed to dismantle ICE and build an agency that people can trust as part of a larger overhaul of the nation's immigration system. The Department of Homeland Security is too big, too unwieldy, and not accountable, and we need to do all this in the guise of immigration reform, Kelly said. It can't be one thing or the other. Pressure on ICE and U.S. Customs and Border Patrol has intensified in recent weeks as the agencies carry out an aggressive enforcement campaign in Minnesota, which has led to violent confrontations between agents and protesters. Earlier this month, it turned deadly after an ICE agent shot 73-year-old American citizen Renee Good at close range while she apparently attempted to flee a traffic stop. Over the weekend, a Border Patrol agent fatally shot 37-year-old American citizen Alex Pretty. Senior Trump administration officials later labeled both as, quote, domestic terrorists, despite them having no criminal records. Video footage and witness accounts contradicted the government's initial versions of events, prompting questions about the use of deadly force. The uproar has spilled over into Illinois' Democratic primary for Senate. Days after Good's killing, Kelly introduced articles of impeachment against Department of Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem. The measure has 140 co-sponsors, including Krishnamoorthy and most of Illinois' Democratic congressional delegation. Immigration dominated the debate even before it began, with Krishnamoorthy's campaign and allies of Stratton releasing ads hours before highlighting their candidate's position on ICE. Quote, Donald Trump has weaponized ICE against our cities and our people, Krishnamoorthy said in a 30-second television ad. Torn apart families, terrorized neighborhoods. We should abolish Trump's ICE. We can't have a government or ICE running out of control. It's morally wrong and it's unlawful. Illinois Future PAC, a group supporting Stratton, launched a targeted digital ad focusing on the immigration issue. Juliana Stratton has made clear ICE must be abolished, not reformed, not retrained, abolished, a narration reads. Every candidate on the debate stage knows what ICE is doing to our state and our country. Juliana Stratton will do what it takes to stop it. And that's the difference, unquote. Trailing in fundraising and polling, Stratton further attempted to use immigration as a wedge against her opponents, particularly Krishnamoorthy, accusing the Schomburg Democrat voting to thank ICE for accepting, quote, funding from ICE contractors. She pointed to nearly $30,000 in campaign contributions Krishnamoorthy received from Shyam Sankar, the Chief Technology Officer at Palantir, which holds a $30 million contract with ICE to provide tools to track self-deportation, the Sun-Times reported last month. The contributions made over several years represent a minuscule fraction of the millions Krishnamurti raised over the past decade. And after the news report came out, his campaign said it donated the sum of Sankar's contributions to unnamed immigrant rights groups. Stratton also criticized Krishnamurti for joining Republicans and 74 Democrats last year in voting for a resolution that expressed, quote, gratitude to ICE officers, arguing that it is, quote, not the example of somebody who is going to stand up to Donald Trump. And staying with local news items, let's have a look at today's obituaries. Rebecca Cacioppo, C-A-C-I-O-P-P-O. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right. Rebecca Cacioppo, 86 years old, formerly of Champaign, passed away peacefully on Sunday, January 25th. Visitation will be on Thursday, January 29th from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., followed by services at Renner Wyckoff Chapel, Urbana, with burial in Woodlawn Cemetery. Next, Rita Eisenmenger, 81 years old, of Posodum, passed away on Saturday, January 24th, in Mahomet. Visitation will be from 9:30 to 11 a.m. on Saturday, January 31st, at St. Mary's Catholic Church in Posodum, with a funeral mass beginning at 11 a.m. Burial will follow in St. Mary's Cemetery. Memorial donations may be made to Restoration Urban Ministries, 1213 Parkland Court in Champaign. Next, Gerald Evans, 77 years old, of Champaign, died on Tuesday, January 27th, at home. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Evergreen Cremation Services in Champaign. Next, Jean Gates of Urbana, aged 99, died Sunday, January 18th at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Visitation will be from 10 to 11 a.m. Friday at Renner Wyckoff Chapel, Philo Road in Urbana. The funeral service will be at 11 a.m. Pastor Robert Freeman will officiate. Next, Janet Lindauer, 92 years old, of Paxton, died Monday, January 26th in Gibson City. Visitation will be from 10 to 11 a.m. Saturday at the Bayer Family Funeral Services in Paxton. Funeral services will be at 11 a.m. at the funeral home on Saturday. Reverend Deborah Domeyer will officiate. The burial will follow in Pine Ridge Cemetery, Loda. Next, Marilyn McCubbin. Marilyn McCubbin, 93 years old, died in Danville Saturday, January 24th. Visitation will be from 1 to 2 p.m. Monday at East Park Church of Christ in Danville. A celebration of life will be at 2 p.m. Monday at the church. Gary Baird will officiate. Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center is handling the arrangements. That's also in Danville. Next, Gloria Wilford, 73 years old, of Clinton, died Saturday, January 24th, at home. Private family services will be held. Calvert Funeral Home is handling the arrangements. And lastly, Jimmy Woodcock of Tolono died at age 84 on Friday, January the 23rd, at home. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Evergreen Cremation Services of Champaign. And rounding out our local news, let's see what Jim Day has to say today. Supreme Court adds to lawyers' long roster of wrongdoing. Lawyers revel in rules, but sometimes find it hard to live within them. That's why the Illinois Supreme Court oversees a lawyer discipline organization, the Attorneys Registration and Disciplinary Commission, that investigates alleged wrongdoing and recommends penalties for barristers who sometimes go bonkers. That was the story again earlier this month when the Illinois Supreme Court, acting on ARDC investigations, disbarred four lawyers and suspended four more for misdeeds ranging from criminal behavior to publicly insulting members of the judiciary. They came from all over Illinois, from Chicago to Olney and three other states, Michigan, South Dakota, and Missouri. Just one, Jason Spangle of Champaign, is local. Charged with taking a client fee but not performing promised work, Spangle also drew sanction for lambasting a local judge on his Facebook page. Officially, he made, quote, false statements about the integrity of Champaign County Circuit Court Judge Ramona Sullivan. But that bland description doesn't do justice to Spangle's colorful disparagement. Quote, Sullivan is a traitor to the Constitution of the United States and should be immediately disbarred. Allowing fetid scum like this to remain on the bench undermines the very principles of justice in this state. No single lawyer has done more to damage the integrity of the legal profession in Illinois than this sorry excuse for a lawyer, Spangle wrote. Ordered to serve 2 years of probation, he will have to meet specific goals to address his personal issues. If he fails, Spangle will be suspended until further order of the court. The UFO provision is generally the equivalent of a lawyer death sentence. Two other lawyers, Joseph Ravago of Chicago and Brian Daly of Grosse Pointe, Michigan, took client money and were disbarred. Ravago defrauded two entities of nearly $12 million. Daly allegedly misappropriated $737,963 in 29 client matters. When ARDC investigators inquired, Daly ignored them, an unwise decision officially interpreted as an admission to the truth of all charges. The juiciest allegations involve a former prosecutor, Mark Schlifka, of Yorkville, the first assistant in the Kendall County State's Attorney's Office. Schlifka had an affair with a woman who was the victim in a case he was prosecuting. At the same time, the woman was the defendant in a criminal case handled by a Schlifka subordinate. In addition, the prosecutor also took nude photographs of that same woman who was sleeping and unable to consent. The court suspended Schlifka's law license for 3 years. More criminal conduct was cited in the drunken driving adventures of a Missouri lawyer, also licensed in Illinois. Missouri indefinitely suspended St. Louis lawyer Joseph Dennigan, prompting the Illinois Supreme Court to impose reciprocal discipline under UFO conditions. The most colorful case involved the now-disbarred Paul Bishop II of Olney, who was charged with the unlawful possession of illegal drugs, cocaine and psilocybin mushrooms. Bishop got a break on the criminal case, but he didn't go straight. He was observed operating his vehicle while smoking from a pipe, one later determined to be a marijuana pipe. Officers also found cocaine in Bishop's car. In addition to driving under the influence, Bishop was also charged with improper use of a turn signal. All of those disciplined were veteran lawyers with at least 15 years of experience. They represent more evidence for why people should thoroughly vet lawyers before they retain them.